Pow! Zap! Boom! Welcome back, listeners, to the KPL Podcast. I am your host, Ryan Drinkard. Another fun-filled episode is in store this week as we tackle one of my favorite subjects, graphic novels. Jagisha couldn't join me this week, but I'm not flying solo. Discussing this subject with me, two very special guests. Comic writer and artist John Allison, creator of Giant Days, and our Director of Adult and Community Services, Mel Lambert. All this and more just ahead, so stay tuned. The keenly aware listeners shall realize I'm not joined by regular host Jagisha this week. Instead, I'm joined by Mel Lambert, the Director of Adult and Community Services. Mel, thanks for keeping me company this week. But before we begin, could you give us a brief bio and what the Director of Adult and Community Services does?
Yeah, well, first off, thank you so much for inviting me today. It's all very exciting for me, and I just want to really thank you for including me. As for what I do, I basically make sure that we as a library are providing all the services and resources we need to be providing for adults in the Kirkwood community. So that just means I let you guys do all everything that you do very well and take care of the paperwork.
Something I'm glad I don't have to do.
But my background is small business, and so I'm also building up the small business nonprofit and career resources that we have here at the Kirkwood Library, including a new database that we will be providing soon called Statista, and also some one-on-one help from local resources for things like legal questions and small and business plan questions. We know in an economic downturn, more people start small businesses, and so I want to make sure that people know how many resources are available to them, and if they have questions, that the library is a great place to start.
Oh, fantastic. Where, if I was one of those people, where would I go? How would I do this?
Well, you can call the library and ask your question.
Oh my goodness. At 314-821-5770?
You can. Or you can email us at reference@kirkwoodpubliclibrary.org.
That definitely sounds familiar.
Does it? You may have checked it. Bit. You may have checked it a couple of times.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to tell us before we get started?
No, I'm just so glad to be at Kirkwood Public Library. I think this is a great community, and I love the stuff you guys do with the podcast, and I'm just very happy to be here.
Well, we can't stay here. We've got a special guest to get to, so let's go. Perhaps my favorite thing about the KPL podcast is the opportunity to have conversations with some of my favorite creators. This episode will be no different. Giant Days is a multi-award-winning series created by John Allison. It has won the Eisners for Best Continuing Series and Best Humor Publication. The series recently wrapped up with its 14th trade volume, now available. John, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure speaking as, I can speak for Mel too, being both fans of your work.
Absolutely. Okay, well, so let's get started with some questions. Let's start about the origin of Giant Days. Would you give our listeners an idea of what it's about and how it came to be?
Giant Days is about three young women who meet on their first day of university and become best friends purely because their rooms in the dorms are next to each other. So it's a very simple setup, and it started as a self-published comic and webcomic around about 2011, I think, was the first issue that I did. I did three issues and then took it to Boom, and they agreed to publish it. And so we kind of rolled on from there in about 2015, started 2015, I think.
One aspect that I love about Giant Days is how real Esther, Susan, and Daisy feel. Like right off the bat, they're emotional, believable, funny. I was chatting recently with a fellow librarian, and we both agreed they feel like people that we've met in our own lives. Was it challenging to find each of their voices, and were they based upon people that you knew in your life?
They weren't based on anyone specific. Really, I just had to clearly delineate their personalities before I started. You know, it's simply a matter of making sure that you don't end up with kind of cookie cutter characters. So, you know, Daisy had to be gentle, Susan was angry, and Esther was mercurial. And I think if I sort of held to those three rules, I could kind of hold the characters where they were. But it's really just experience of writing lots of characters. I've written dozens and dozens of characters in my webcomics, and you have to learn how to differentiate them, or you really do just kind of make a soup. And I didn't want to make a soup with Giant Days.
Well, I never got that impression. I loved each of the characters.
Me too. Talking about the characters of Giant Days, they stem from this continuity of your webcomics, Scary Go Round, Bobbins, and Bad Machinery. So essentially, the universe is large and continues to grow with recent titles like Wicked Things and Steeple. Can you tell us a little bit more about those?
It's kind of like I planted a tree and it just keeps growing more and more branches. Like, so the trunk is now so far beneath the canopy that sometimes I forget quite often what happens, and readers have to remind me when I've got things wrong. But Wicked Things is about a character who... she was a child in the original comics that Esther from Giant Days appeared in, the original Scary Go Round comics. Then she was in a series that was published by Oni Press, like a 10-book series called Bad Machinery. And I just snuck her into Giant Days a couple of times, kind of as a little treat for the fans, more than anything, really, because she had a relationship with Esther in prior comics. I thought it would be fun. There was no need for anyone to have read any of the other books if they'd only read Giant Days, but it would be a little wink for people. And then, because this character I'd taken her from 9, and then she'd gone through all the Bad Machinery books, and due to the complicated kind of way they all lock together, she's only a little girl when she appears in Giant Days, but in all the other stories that have gone on, Narnia-like, you know, she's now too old for those stories. So I created a new series for her called Wicked Things, which is a kind of a detective series, a little bit like The Mentalist or Monk, you know, a kind of twisted detective series. And so, yeah, that does lock back into the original kind of Scary Go Round mothership. Steeple's a little more complicated, because that's a series I developed off to the side, but they're all linked. You know, it's the same way we're all kind of in the Jerry Seinfeld shared universe. We just never meet him, you know, but it's still the same world. So Steeple could theoretically cross over with other characters, but I'd only have a limited number of pages, and I have so many stories to do that it's unlikely that any of those characters will ever show up.
When I first discovered Giant Days, I was pretty much fatigued with like superhero comics, and instantly I was drawn to it. And I think what caught my attention first was just the art. So both Lisa Treman, dang that right? Fantastic.
That's right.
And Max Sarin are amazing. How did they become involved in the series? And was that serendipity, or did you seek them out?
Lisa Treman I sought out. Lisa had been a reader of Scary Go Round, I think perhaps from when she was in high school. I'd have to check the actual date. She entered a competition. I had a competition for people to draw like one guest strip, and Lisa won it. And this was long before she worked at Disney Animation. But, you know, we stayed in touch. And so kind of that must have been about 2008, I think. And I knew how good Lisa was at drawing my characters. And that was really it. I don't think I knew that Lisa had gone to Disney. Or if I did know, it wasn't at the front of my mind when I asked her to get involved with Giant Days. I had drawn the original 3 self-published issues of Giant Days, but this was meant to be a kind of supplementary project along with the other books that I was doing. So Lisa was the first person I thought of to do it at Boom, a perfect kind of Boom Studios artist as well, just in terms of what the other books like Lumberjanes and things were that they did, you know, that really sort of bright animation-y style. And Max, when Lisa left after 6 issues due to being, you know, quite high powered in the world of mouse-based animation, Max was a student of a friend of mine who taught at an art school in Wales and was the star student, really. And so I asked Dan, my friend Dan Barry, if he had any students or people, recent graduates who were looking for work, and he recommended Max. Max did a test and it was incredible. And so that relationship really was serendipitous, because if I hadn't met Dan Barry at a live drawing event, you know, in 2010, I don't think Max and I would have worked together, and the industry may never have seen some of the amazing pages that Max is capable of.
So it's a combination of the two.
You always have to have your eyes on the prize. If you think you're going to get to do something like that, you've always got your kind of fantasy list of people you'd like to work with, or people where if you get the call, you know who the first call you put into is going to be. And with Lisa, it was definitely that. I knew how much I wanted to work with her. And with Max, just pure luck, yeah.
So were you always into comics? And if so, what comics were you into and obsessed with when you were growing up?
Comics were bought for me from a very young age. Now, what you got in the UK was very different to what you got in the US. And even in mainland Europe, our comics tradition is a bit strange in the UK. But we would get a lot of reprints of US Marvels, but sort of out of order sometimes, and with, you know, you get things stuck in the back because they were weekly, not monthly. You'd get kind of 22 or 31 pages. Your main feature would be some kind of licensed toy tie-in, and then you'd get a backup strip of whatever editorial thought you might like, you might find nourishing, you know, from the vast catalogue of stuff that was printed in America. So as a kid, I was bought like the Transformers comic, which it was half the US material and then half kind of UK originated material, because as a weekly, there wasn't enough material in the American book to fill it. And that's kind of like what half of UK comics pros of my age grew up with. The other half read 2000 AD, the science fiction comic with Judge Dredd in it. So I grew up with those until I was old enough to kind of go into the big city and go to the imported comic book store and kind of get Marvels and read the American books. But I kind of, yeah, so that would have been what I liked. And I liked what everybody liked, who was 11 and wanted to, you know, have their mind warped. I like sort of Uncanny X-Men and things like that, you know, books that were slightly sort of lascivious and slightly, you know, when you look at them now, you're like, really? I read this when I was 10? Are you sure? I wouldn't give this to a 10-year-old. This is quite far out. But yeah, so that warped my mind a little bit. And then I kind of I was reading those until I was, I guess, 16, and I drifted out of comics for a bit because I got tired of superheroes. Like, the narrative started to seem repetitive to me, and I, you know, I would enjoy the craft, but not stories, if that makes sense. So
yeah, absolutely.
A few years out, yeah, until I kind of discovered indie stuff.
Couldn't agree more. Sympathize with the finding it difficult to find the comics. So when I was a little kid, my mother got me hooked on Doctor Who in the 80s, and that was very difficult to find because they pretty much the only comics existed in the magazine, which was not sold. So like, it was just every now and then, if we were on the road and we went by a comic store, if I was lucky, they had something, but there was no way to continue the story. I just got bits and bobs here and there.
Yeah, it was fun though. It was fun because you'd have to be very Catholic in your taste, because like sometimes like market stalls would have a few US Marvel or DC comics, but you didn't know what you would get. So you would get an odd issue of something. It's funny, we now live in a world where, you know, things aren't allowed to run for more than 12 issues in case people get confused, but you'd get issue 217. And that would be the only one you'd be able to find. And you'd have to work out what on earth was going on in this comic. I think that kind of informed my approach with Giant Days, where every issue I realized that could have been, you know, somebody's only issue. So they would have to kind of work it out. And I wanted them to be able to pick it up the way I picked up comics when I was, you know, 11, 12, 13.
So having started out as a web cartoonist, was it easy or difficult to transition to like a multi-page monthly book?
It was easy in a sense that I think you learn to write with a certain sort of density that makes your comics seem quite approachable. You know, it's like, oh, that's good value. You know, there's a joke on every page, because you're used to writing a joke on every page in webcomics, or, you know, or a significant beat, shall we say, if you're not a gag merchant. But I didn't understand things like page turns properly, you know, like sort of putting surprises after the page turn and things like that. It took me a little while to work things like that out. There were things that I had that gave me advantages over people who've worked in monthly comics their whole life. And there were significant disadvantages that meant I was like a complete novice. Unfortunately, they kind of balanced each other out, where I just became an average comic creator.
Did you have someone like helping you figure those things out with the page turning? Did someone say, oh, hey, you might want to put this on the next page? And
I just tried to become a scholar. Once I worked in like monthly comics, I tried to like read more, listen to podcasts, watch videos where pros talked about what they did. And I'm quite a good study when it's what I've got to do. You know, I can really get deep into the weeds with things. So I now have shelves full of books about like the Bronze Age of comics and things like this, and kind of all the old masters. So in the end, it turned out to be just doing that book ended up being a sort of opening up of like learning how comics really, really work, because even though I'd drawn thousands of pages of web comics, I didn't have a clue how comics worked, really.
Yeah. So then kind of what is your best advice for anyone who is an aspiring writer or cartoonist?
My advice that I always give to people is just concentrate on finishing something. And it doesn't matter if it's no good, because you can only make something that's as good as you are at any given time. And it's only in the process of finishing that you'll have a product that you can learn from. So if you're only able to do one side of kind of letter paper, do one side of letter paper and that's your comic, you know, then try two the next time. Work out ideas that you can do. Lots of people, especially when you're a teenager and your ideas get big, but you don't have the experience to put it into practice, you'll fill, you know, exercise books with all your notes about all your characters and your world building exercises, but there's no actual work at the end of it. It's just the excitement of ideas. And what you need to do is kind of balance the excitement of ideas with just making something and getting something finished. And it doesn't matter if you only show it to four friends because you're not sure it's any good. Just concentrate on doing little stories, strips, anything really, until you're confident enough to take on longer things. I'm not still super confident about longer books. I really like kind of 22 and 44 page stories because I know I can handle that many pages. I'm not going to start forgetting things. But yeah, so just do whatever you can manage really. And it doesn't matter. I've seen work by people who could barely draw, where I could look at their drawings and I could see from all the different things they were trying that they really understood comics. They just didn't have the skill yet to draw the comics that they saw in their head. But as somebody who's made all those thousands of pages, I knew exactly what they were trying to do. And I knew that as long as they keep at it, eventually they'll get there. So that's my advice.
Indeed, advice it is.
Yeah.
So being librarians, we love Reader's Advisory. So is there a comic, a webtoon, or maybe even a book that we should be into right now that maybe our American audience is unaware of?
Oh, that's really interesting. I really like in terms of sort of effortless cartooning, I really like the French cartoonist Penelope Bajeur, who is translated into English now widely. She's very popular in France and she has a big international audience as well. There's a new version of Roald Dahl's The Witches that she's done, which is a really great, I wish I was able to be as effortless as she is. She also did a book about the mamas and the papas called California Dreaming, or it might just be about Mama Cass actually, which again is really good. But that would be, Penelope Bajeur would be a good recommendation because anybody can pick those books up as well. There's something to enjoy, whatever sort of cartooning you like, I think. There's really good drawing and there's good stories and there's and she has books for young and old as well.
That sounds pretty good. We'll have to check, and that's on my list now.
Yeah, I just wrote it down.
And we'll definitely add all that stuff in the show notes.
Great. So I'm just trying to think if there's anything else that in particular that I've had recently. It's really hard because I've had loads. It was my birthday on Tuesday and I got loads of books and graphic novels, and now my brain's a bit foggy from all the booty that I received.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy belated birthday.
October babies are the best.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly.
Oh, I'm a January.
My brother's a January, so don't worry, I've got a lot of sympathy for January.
Thanks, we need it.
How can we learn more about you and your works?
I have loads of webcomics online that people can read. With my website is scarygoround.com, where there are links to all sorts of different works. Some you can read on the website, some you can download as PDFs. I'm doing a daily webcomic at the moment at steeple.church, which is kind of a continuation of the book I did with Dark Horse last year. And that's all free to read. And it's at the moment it's updating Monday to Thursday. I'm on Twitter, I'm at Bad Machinery. I'm on Instagram, I'm at Bad Machinery as well. And there I post loads of sketches and behind the scenes work, and you can see just how kind of feeble my efforts are and how my brain barely fires half the time. I like to put a mixture of work I'm proud of and work people can see that really this is not a genius at work at all, but more a sort of a genius, shall we say, just a simple boy doing his best. I think that's it. I think that those are the best places to find me.
So I'm curious, this might be a difficult question, do you have a favorite story arc in Giant Days?
I think Daisy's story arc, where she kind of explores her sexuality and has a girlfriend and it I don't want to spoil anything for any readers, but it's, she goes through a lot. She's the most naive character, and she has to do an awful lot of growing and also an awful lot of learning in the course of that storyline. And I never, ever intended when I started that series to tackle anything that deep or complicated. And so the fact that that came out of me in the first place is when you've got a lot of pages to fill, I only ever thought I was going to have 6 monthly issues of Giant Days to do at the start. So the places you'll go when you're given 60 issues instead of 6 really surprise you. So yeah, that, I think that's my favourite story. And just because it's not like anything else I've done anywhere else, really, it was kind of, it kind of naturally evolved out of the series. Yeah, so that's my favourite. But as I can't say too much, because if people haven't read, I think that's a little bit of a roller coaster.
That's one of my favourites too. So
yeah, her journey is amazing. So before we wrap up, is there any like last thoughts or anything else that you'd like us to know or that we should be talking about?
I'm just so pleased and thankful for the response from libraries for these books, because without libraries, I mean, Giant Days wouldn't run for 14 volumes. I mean, that's a nutty amount of books. It looks wild on the shelf. I hope people continue to support libraries, really. I think it's so important. And, you know, I grew up in libraries. My love of comics, as well as the ones that I was bought, we didn't have a lot of money when I was growing up. I went to the village library and I got all the Asterix books out. You know, they had them all. Those were the comics that British libraries had in, you know, 1986. Were the Asterix books, but it was all there for you. And if it hadn't been, who knows what sort of, you know, artist and writer I might have turned out to be, ruined by those salacious X-Men comics. So yeah, just all your, anyone watching, yeah, just keep supporting your local library. If anyone ever says they're going to close the libraries down, stand outside the libraries with a sign and shake it around. You know, you have to, they're important.
That does my heart good.
Yeah. I love
to hear that. Thank you so much, John.
Oh, thank you both very much.
We'll definitely stand outside libraries with you.
Definitely.
So our guest today was author and cartoonist John Allison. The entirety of Giant Days and Steeple Volume 1 is available at your Kirkwood Public Library and, of course, wherever fantastic books are sold. At the time of this recording, Wicked Things Issue 1 can be enjoyed via Hoopla or wherever you get your comics. John, it was a pleasure and an honor to speak with you today.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Mel.
Thank you.
Since this is an episode of kind of my favorite things, if there is one thing that I do not get enough of, is comments from listeners. So please, people, write in. And this week, our recommendation segment is in response to a requested topic, a graphic novels, nonfiction, and literature for an adult reader. So, with that in mind, Mel, what's your first recommendation?
So this is one that I just recently read. It's The Banks by Roxane Gay and Ming Doyle. It came out late last year, and I know people can pick it up. We have it on order here, so they can put it on hold.
Mm-hmm.
But it follows three generations of women,
mm-hmm.
Women thieves, pulling off one final heist.
Oh, neat.
It's got this noir feel to it, and it has this heist game going on. I just really enjoyed it. It's awesome. And so I really recommend, if you're into heist mm-hmm. movies and shows and books, thrillers, that you'll enjoy it.
And who isn't? I mean, those are just so much fun.
I know.
Right. High octane. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Roxane Gay is so prolific.
Yes.
I just need to check that one out.
Yeah, for sure.
So mine that I'm going to start with is the March trilogy. I've recommended this one on the podcast before, but I feel with the passing of the late Congressman John Lewis, that it is definitely worth mentioning again. It is a fantastic, it's the graphic novelization of the life of John Lewis during the Civil Rights Movement. And it is a very powerful and incredibly relevant story today. And it has amazing art by Nate Powell. And it's a beautiful book. And so I highly recommend it. All three volumes are a must. March by John Lewis.
I love that. I actually didn't know it was a trilogy. I've read the first two mm-hmm. and did not know that there was a third. So now I have something for my reading list.
Awesome. That's the best part of recommendations. Yeah. So do you have another for me?
I do. So Day Tripper by Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba.
I was going to say, this one I am familiar with.
Okay.
Yeah, so that is a good one.
I absolutely fell in love with this book. It's about the little moments in life and living life up until death, whatever that point may be. And I can't really say any more about it without spoilers and ruining the book, other right. than that it's an absolutely beautifully drawn book as well. And it tackles themes of mortality and living all the moments in your life. And I haven't read it in a while, but I'm about 99.9% sure that I cried. so definitely.
It is an emotional gut punch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely an emotional ride.
Yeah.
So definitely check that out.
That is a good one. Yeah. I was, when you said that, I'm like, I don't know how she's going to do it because can't spoil that one. My next one is going to be My Favorite Things is Monsters by Emil Ferris. This is a graphic novel that is gorgeous, that is, as I understand it, was all drawn with a Bic pen. The illustrations are amazing. It's basically a story about a 10-year-old young lady who is going to be, she's a detective, and she's investigating her upstairs neighbor's death. This is all set back in the 60s in Chicago. Again, I can't give too many spoilers, but yeah. There's definitely a World War II connection, and the entire book is filled with kind of a, you know, pulp monster iconography, because she's like she's obsessed with monster movies. So this kind of monster obsessed art kind of bleeds in, and the book basically reads like her diary or journal that is filled with just amazing images, wonderfully drawn, and a good mystery to boot. So,
I love it.
Yeah, My Favorite Thing is Monsters.
Okay. I just had one more. I did choose a nonfiction one to throw in there. Persepolis by Marjan Satrapi. It's the author's memoir of growing up in Iran during the Islamic Revolution. And I personally didn't really have a grip on, you know, what Iran was like during this time period. And this book gave me context and history of what people in the region were going through. And so I just really connected with the character, you know, and her life. And I think it's a great nonfiction read.
I feel like I say this a lot, but I'll second that. I did. That was my exposure to what life was like on that part of the globe. I did not, before reading Persepolis, I did not really know anything about it. That's just a beautiful book.
Yeah.
I've not read this. It has a sequel, doesn't it?
It does. And I've read it. And it is good as well. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't, like, I think as, it didn't affect me as much as maybe the first book did.
Often the way of sequels.
Yeah. So.
I've got one more as well. It is a nonfiction. It is another that I've recommended on the podcast, but I think it's a very good book. It's by Alison Bechdel. Mm-hmm. It is Fun Home. It is about, it is her memoir about when she came out and then she learned that her father was gay, like right before he passed. And it's basically her story kind of dealing with her history and all these issues of how well did she know her father. And it's both a beautiful and tragic story.
I absolutely love this book too. Although I didn't love the play as much when I went and saw the play, so
I've not seen it, but that's kind of what I've heard, that yeah, it's not as good.
It's not as, you know, I think to your point, this book is very kind of tragic and melancholy, and I think for the musical they kind of punched it up and made it
right
too happy.
I could see, yeah, like that was what I was thinking. It's you know, it. There's a lot of hope in that book, but it's gonna put you in a low. You know, it's. It's, as you said, melancholy. That's where it lives. Well, those are some of our recommendations. But as I said at the top, we really want to hear yours. We love talking about books, and it's got to be a two-way dialogue. So what is your favorite? You know, it doesn't have to be graphic novels. You can tell us all about your favorite books. So,
And one of the things that I really enjoyed about this week's episode was having Mel join me, because why she was the perfect fit, much like myself, she loves graphic novels. So before we go, what do you think your favorite graphic novel property is?
Property?
Or anything. Well, I don't want to say superhero, because I don't want to confine it to that. But, sure. You know, being I think, people who basically that was what we, how yeah. this, that was our gateway drug, yep. so to speak.
Oh, my gosh. So it's so funny that you put it that way, because I always say that my gateway comic mm-hmm. is the Archie comics. That
oh,
was
nice.
The first comics that I ever read mm-hmm. as a kid, and my mom had read them when she was little, so it was kind of like this thing that she, my sister and I read them, and, you know, we would go and pick one out from the magazine rack, and so I think that that's probably, like, the one that I still love, even to this day. I don't watch Riverdale.
Mm-hmm.
But
I've not seen it.
But, you know, I love the Archie comic series. I loved the afterlife with Archie when they did that with the horror and, you know, the art from Franco Villa. And mm-hmm. just, like, that's probably the property that I still connect with. Because then you also have within that, like, Josie and the Pussycats kind of started from there. And Sabrina and...
Yeah.
I just like that world.
He's got Kevin.
Kevin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of, I think, the best things that, like, what you mentioned, Afterlife with Archie, that's fantastic. But I love the Archie versus Predator.
I haven't read it. So, I have to, yeah, it's been on my list.
Or I haven't read it yet. I think there was Punisher versus Archie.
Oh, awesome.
It's awesome. I can't wait for what Alien versus Archie
yes.
has to be next.
AVP v. Archie.
Awesome.
So what's your property?
That is, I knew you were going to turn on this on me, and I'm struggling because it changes by the hour. I feel like for comic books that introduced me, it was The Amazing Spider-Man. My grandfather was a giant bolster of reading. And he kind of used comics as I said earlier, the gateway drug. So he, any time we'd see him, which was fairly often, you know, we pretty much was our babysitter, him and my grandmother, and he would take me to the comic store every time. And my grandmother would be like, "You're going to the comic store too much." And he'd always say, "If he's reading, I'm buying." And I think it was Amazing Spider-Man was probably the first one. So I've got a fondness for Spidey. But I mean, I go through modes. Like there was an hour where I was all Justice League, much like most of my contemporaries in the 90s. It was all about the Uncanny X-Men. So I have just a plethora of those. I really like right now. I'm really grooving. I've always been a big Ghostbuster fan. So the Burnham, Dan Shuning Ghostbuster books have been a lot of fun. Oh my goodness, we're gonna get off, and it's gonna occur to me what my favorite is. I love them all. Probably the X-Men was probably the longest, yeah. but like a lot of Marvel properties, especially with the X-Men, I go through where I'm like, I can't stand them right now, you know.
Yeah, I actually didn't read my first superhero comic until I was in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So all the comics I read were not superhero based, mm-hmm. and I took like a free comics class at Star Clipper that used to be in Del Mar.
Oh yeah.
And that opened my world to just all of these different superhero comics that I had never read. So Grant Morrison's JLA I read in my 20s and was just like, yes.
Oh yeah, that was a really good one. So yeah, I guess I'm now can answer. So when I was growing up, I think apart from Amazing Spider-Man, I was reading classic X-Men, Chris Claremont stuff. So like when I first started reading, they were republishing the classics in classic X-Men, and it was the Dark Phoenix saga, as I recall, when I was getting into it.
Yes.
And that pretty much was solidified. So I wouldn't buy Uncanny X-Men until I had that month's issue of classic.
Got it.
Yeah. Well, it was wonderful talking comics with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining.
We close the cover on another thrilling issue of the KPL podcast and place it back on the spinner rack. But before we go, I'd like to extend a very big thank you to our special guest, John Allison, visiting host, Mel Lambert, and the kind listener who wrote in. If you'd like to hear the KPL podcast tackle a particular subject, or would just like to make a comment, please write us at podcast@kirkwoodpubliclibrary.org. We leave now on the advice of writer, illustrator, and filmmaker Marjan Satrapi, creator of Persepolis. Graphic novels are not traditional literature, but that does not mean they are second rate. Images are a way of writing. When you have the talent to be able to write and draw, it seems a shame to choose one. I think it's better to do both. We'll be back next week.